check, check.
Come on, that's not that funny. I'm Jeff, I'm an alcoholic.
Hey,
hi! I'm from Los Osos.
No, we're.
So, I'm an alcoholic, and my name is Jeff. But actually, I'm Jeff, I'm an alcoholic. Because, I mean, my disease does not define me, although it does shape who I am. I'm an alcoholic, but my name is Jeff, and I'm an alcoholic. It's not like I'm an alcoholic first. Like, my disease does not define me. I guess that's what I'm trying to say. My disease does not define me. Right? But boy, do I have a disease. And when I hear the description of the alcoholic, I go, oh yeah. And I didn't know that I was an alcoholic. I did not know until May 9th, 1988, and that was my last drink. And I found out, like, really, I found out, boom, like the Lord smite me a mighty blow, I found out, you know? But for Ashley and Brad and Joe and Patrick, welcome. Welcome to Alcoholics Anonymous. And a happy birthday and happy birthday. Oh my God, this is an amazing group of people. This fellowship is powerful. God is in the room. You know, you can call it a group of drunks. You can call it whatever you want, but I know that there's power in Alcoholics Anonymous. And so I plan on sticking around, and at least for another 35 minutes. So I believe I was born an alcoholic. It's not like a surprise to the theory of the disease of alcoholism. That is the disease that I have. It speaks to me in different languages, but it's always the same theme. It speaks to me whenever I see a beautiful woman. I think, oh my God, I think of my wife. I think, oh my God, I'm married. I think about my wife. And whenever I look at like a cake, or I hear, there's a place called Slow Dough Co. in San Luis Obispo, and they have donuts. And they call my name. They call my name. They ask me to come in and eat three, at least. But I don't just eat three. I eat three on my way home from the Friday night speaker meeting, and I eat them in the car so that when I get home, my wife doesn't have me eating donuts in the house. So, like, I not only just eat them in the car, you know, like in 15 minutes, because I'm an addict and I want to get that sugar in me like as fast as I can. But then I don't want any trace of the sugar, you know. And then I have to hide the stuff in the trash can. It's like hiding bottles or something. Like, you know, I put it down in the recycling bin so no one will see that I actually did it, you know, because like it's like a slip or something, you know. And so I have 29 days without a donut. And I think I can get a chip tomorrow. So, seriously. So, a whole bag of chips. All that and a bag of chips. So, when I was a kid, I had an issue with my brain. It just wouldn't communicate. I couldn't communicate what I was feeling, what I was thinking. And my brain goes really, really fast, and it was a real frustration. And when I was about 6 or 7, I started buying candy bars. I'd take my 25-cent allowance, which was quite a bit of money, and I would go down to the Castec market, and I could get 6 candy bars for a quarter. And in my car, I sat in the back seat. There was like the three seats, you know, and we had a station wagon, like a country squire. Ooh, nice car. With a fake wood on the side. And we go to church on Sundays. We went to St. Michael's Episcopal Church. And so we were like Catholics without guilt. And so I would sit in the back. Now what happens is every Sunday after church, we'd go for a family drive. And there's Linda, Wendy, Jay, Meg, Jeff, Tina. So I'm number 5 child, number 2 son. on Saturday, I take my allowance and I get the candy bars. And I sit in the back. And after church on Sundays, we go for our drive. And I would take out that Three Musketeers bar because that's the one that I liked. And oh my God, it was huge. You know, for a nickel, it was like a $1.50 candy bar today. You know, but let's not talk about inflation tonight, shall we? But you know, then my brother would go, "Oh, can I have a bite?" And I go, "Why not? Wait a minute, Jay. I thought you liked Butterfingers." Oh, you know. By the way, he did switch to Paydays later on, but kidding. Know your customer, kind of a rule there. But at any rate, I'd say, he goes, "Oh, yeah." And I go, "They're 10 cents." He goes, "They're only a nickel." I said, "They're 10 cents in the car."
"Dad, if you want to have a candy bar from your brother, then you're welcome to buy one."
And so I would sell all the candy bars in the car, and I'd make 50 cents, and mine was free. So I was dealing by the time I was in like second grade. But what happened on Saturday nights is I'd put that bag in the closet up above, you know, where you had that little shelf where you could put like your hats or something. And they would call me. They'd go, "Jeffrey." They were there. They called, "Jeff." And I knew that if I didn't take that candy bar, if I did, it'd blow the whole deal. I wouldn't have my candy bar to start the whole thing, right? I wouldn't have like that one to start everyone going like, "Yeah, I want some of that." Yeah. "No, I want some of that." You have to have your stash to start it going. And so I would just be really what I thought was disciplined. But I think the point of this story is that it still is my issue today. You know, you can have 28 years, but you're like 29 days without a donut. You know, it's just that disease, and it just manifests in different things. In the big book, it says that, you know, alcohol is but a symptom, you know. And so there it is. And that's where I'm going to go with that part of that story. Just where, you know, what was my earliest recollection of my discomfort and stuff? I think that at Saturday nights, lying in bed, you know, having those candy bars called to me was not comfortable. Now, I was a pretty, happy kid. You know, I actually was a happy drunk. You know, I wasn't a guy who got in fights and stuff, although I certainly had plenty of them. But they were, none of them were my fault. And I was actually, you know, treasurer in high school, you know, and I was president of the Episcopal Young Churchmen. You know, I was an acolyte, which, by the way, was the best place to be in the church. It was like when you're up in the altar area and you're looking down at the people taking communion, you can see down their tops. Fucking great, you know. I mean, you know, and I didn't think that was twisted. I really thought that I was connected with my higher power who wanted me there at that moment for that moment. And I felt I was blessed, you know, and I still do believe that to be the case. But what happened, thank you, Daniel, that's my son. Here's the thing. All through high school, I found out that there was a lot of things you could do besides drinking, and they're not outside issues. I mean, when I hear someone say they're an addict alcoholic, I think it's like the Department of Redundancy Department. Like, it's you are. I mean, it is. I'm an addict alcoholic. I'm an alcoholic addict. I mean, if there's an ick in it, I probably got it, you know. Food addict. I mean, whatever. You know, gambler. I don't know. Although I did have an issue with the horses. I am talking about gambling with them. But when I got to high school, there was all sorts of other things going on in the 70s, and then when I wound up going in the Navy taught me how to drink. You know, high school, I could do acid, I could do mushrooms, I could do all those other things. But when I got in the Navy really let me have the opportunity to be a real drinking man. At 18, I was a sailor, and I could drink. And I had, you know, and you wouldn't have to be 21 years of age, you know. And I really, it was kind of funny because I got stationed over in Europe, which it didn't matter anyways. You know, you could drink anywhere in Europe, you know. But I wound up getting I found the very first opportunity when I flew into Italy, I had all this weed underneath my shirt that I'd gotten from California. and I'm in my uniform, and I'm flying, and I arrive, and there's a taxi cab driver who picks me up at, and we're in Naples, and he's driving me to the ship, and he says, you know, you want some hash, but he said it like an Italian, and he throws this brick of hash into the back seat, and I go, oh, you know, I mean, got a lighter, and so I take a little bit, and you know, and it expands and everything, so you know, it's legit. And then I said, well, yeah, hey, you know, and I throw a bag of Colombian, like, and then he goes, whoa, you know, I almost crashed the car, you know, like, oh, because there's, like, no marijuana in Europe, you know, there's lots of hash, this blonde Turkish Lebanese up the butt, but there's no marijuana, and so he goes, hey, you know, is it even, you know, like, I go, sure, yeah, squared away. I mean, I'm thinking that's like a $100 brick of hash for like $30 worth of weed. It's a good deal. And so, you know, just know your customer. And so he says every weekend he'll be at the Bluebird Club in Naples. So this kind of starts my naval career, if you will, in supply. And the thing that was interesting about it was I'm 18 years old. And I thought that if I could get one of those Mersham pipes, which they have, you know, then you can put Borkum Riff in it, right? And you can put some hash in the bottom of it, and it'll smell like cherry, you know? So I'm like walking around like I'm a sailor. You know? And I got the weed, but the hash and the Borkum Riff. And every time there was an opportunity to do something way high up on the 04 level or above, that's where I wanted to go. Because I mean, I've got Yosemite on my... I mean, I like to mountain climb. I like to go to high places, literally. And so I would always go up to the high places because then I could smoke all day in the middle of the Mediterranean. You know, you could see the Azores off in the... Oh, this is awesome. And at any rate, the Navy got me the opportunity to drink as much as I wanted to drink without getting in trouble. There really were no consequences. There was no consequences in high school. There were no real consequences when I was serving my country. There was no consequences for years. I got out of the Navy, and I mean, literally, I was on three different ships, and everywhere I went, it's like everyone was like doing the same thing. And so, you know, it was like a badge. It was like, you know, if you could hoot with the owls and fly with the eagles, then you were a man. And so I was on that mission to prove my manliness, just to myself, you know, that I could do it. And so what happens is I wind up getting out of the Navy and the GI Bill, and I go to college, and I'm taking political science courses because I want to be the next United States Senator for California. And I wind up taking a humanities requirement, which is an introduction to theater 101, because Ronald Reagan's probably going to be president, and I should probably take some acting classes if I really want to be serious about a political career. And I got into the theater department, and all the guys were gay, and that's okay. And I mean, it really, it's wonderful, because all the girls were gorgeous, and I figure like, wow, this is amazing, you know. I'll play Jim the Gentleman Caller. I'll do whatever role there is to do, because, you know, I got to play all the roguish parts. But even doing all the roguish parts allowed me to continue to drink. And my favorite actor was Richard Burton. Oh, my God. To be, you know, I mean, God, the guy's just got... He shoots out hammering like a machine gun. To be, you know, he's just so intense. And I find out later on he was just so drunk. You know, the guy, you know, he marries Elizabeth Taylor like four times. How drunk can you be to marry her like twice? And he's like, four times? Are you kidding me, Richard? What a dick. So he winds up doing all these things like just completely blasted. And I found out that when he was doing Hamlet on the stage in London, he was so drunk when he did the to be or not to be soliloquy, he was actually on his side leaning out to the audience. Because he was so drunk, he couldn't stand up. And then he crawled off the stage. And then he got some vinegar and stuff and threw up and everything and went back and, you know. He got great reviews for that. He reached the lowest depths of despair that Hamlet had ever been. And the reviews just loved him. And so I go, that's what I want to do. I want to do Hamlet shit-faced. Or any other role, for that matter. And so it seemed like all the characters that I was working with as an actor, as an artist, was... thank you. Always drinking. All of my characters drank. Whether he was Judd in Oklahoma, whether he was Teddy Lloyd, whether he was in West Side Story, whether he was Kinnicky, they all had bottles. And that way I could nip during the shows, legit. And then no one knew. Really? No one knew. And then, of course, you know, there's other things that come into the scene, like there's these white powder substances that allow you to continue to do, like, the second show that night. And if you're doing summer repertory theater, you want to, like, have a matinee and then be able to do the next show, because you're going to have to drink it through that show, too. So it got not too confusing, but it got a lot of fun. And that's what it was. It was a lot of fun. You know, I'm getting good roles. I'm getting good lays. I'm getting, you know, a good time. And then one day on May 9th, 1988, I'm driving my Mustang, which had like one last payment, and I'm going down Occidental Road because I'm going to go see my sister, Wendy, who's a teacher. And she's fairly normal. I mean, for a treat, she's pretty normal. And I can't even tell you what kind of candy bar she liked. She was so normal. And then I'm on my way to go see my sister, and I'm on Occidental Road, and I miss the turn, and I roll off the cliff. And I rolled the Mustang 5 times. It's all in the police report. You know, I'll bring it next time. And it's apparently I was driving 85 miles an hour. According to the nurse, who I had passed her in the left lane, and at the very last possible moment, I swerved, avoiding a head-on 18-wheeler. And she said to her husband, "I don't think he's going to make it to where he's going." It's in the police report. At any rate, I wasn't wearing a seatbelt because I don't like seatbelts. I still really don't like them, but back then I really didn't like them because they restrict you. You can't reach over and get your cigarette. You can't reach over and get another beer. You know, they just can. It's hard to be free, you know, when you're in a seatbelt with the fucking shoulder straps. Anyway, I rolled the Mustang 5 times, and because I wasn't wearing a seatbelt, it threw me out of the car, and then the car landed on top of me. And I really felt fortunate that later on I got to meet the paramedics who showed up on scene and asked them what did they experience, because I knew what I experienced. And what I experienced was, this is so amazing for me, I left my body, and I looked down at myself, and I saw myself through the car. And I was going, and I said, "You look like a fish." And then I said, "Oh, your new sport coat. I just ruined my new sport coat." I went, "Oh, your new sport coat." And then I said, "You need to change." And it actually was at that moment that the desire for drinking and all of that was removed at that moment. And then I ascended more. And I experienced it as an ascension. I'm going up. And there was this bright light. And you heard about a bright light experience. I had a bright light experience. If you've had a bright light experience, you know exactly what I'm talking about. You can't define it. You can't describe it. You're hard-pressed to tell you what this was like. But it changes someone's life. At least it changed mine. It changed Bill Wilson's. It changed Paul on the road to Damascus. You know, totally changed my life. And I'm in God. I'm with God. God is washing through me. It's in me. And the love that I experienced, it's hard to describe. If you've ever had a child that you've held for the first time, your first time you've ever held that baby. And my son's here, and I can tell you how much I love him. But the first time I held that baby, that much love I felt for that human being at that time, magnified 1,000 times squared. Unbelievable love. And that's what I experienced. I experienced what I call God. And then I passed on And I'm talking to my Uncle Robert. And Uncle Robert, who had died 6 months before, was there. That's crazy. Because, you know, he was no Christian. He wasn't a good Quaker. He wasn't a good husband to his wife. He wasn't a good father to my cousin Mike. He was a great brother to my mother. He was an excellent uncle to this guy. But he wasn't any quote-unquote Christian. I mean, he went to Easter and Christmas with us. And, you know, but he actually, I think what happened is he was sitting in his chair in his underwear at 8 o'clock, 8:30 in the morning. And he was smoking a Chesterfield and drinking a CC on the rocks. And he stroked out and he died. That's how Uncle Robert went.
And next time I'll bring the police report. I mean, the medical report. But that's
how it went. He's there and I'm there. And so here's the deal. As far as I see it, if Uncle Robert's there and I'm there, you guys, y'all get to go. That's the good news. Y'all get to go. Joe, we get to go. Right? And then, he said, you can pass on or you can come back. It's your choice. And so, I came back into my body. And I like my body. I mean, maybe I like it a little too much, you know. But it's a good body. You know, it's a little linebacker body. It's a good body for me. So I came back in the body and I was in a coma for like 10 and a half days. I was in a coma. And then when I came out of my coma, my mom and dad are sitting in the hospital room. And my father is Dr. Treat. Now, my father went to Yale. He went to Stanford Med School, so he's a fairly educated, and he's a pretty, as a matter of fact, kind of guy. And my mother is just so full of love. I did not have a bad childhood. I was not drinking for any reason. There was no reason for me to drink. I was from the Love Too Much Club. You know, that's what my problem was. You know, and I know my mother was full of love because I watched her cooking and she would actually put love in her meals as an ingredient. I was on acid, but I saw it, and she does do that. So there they are, and I come out of my coma and I look at them and I said, Uncle Robert says, hello. And my mother was like, and my father was, all right. So what happens is after about a month or so in the hospital, I got a halo unit on because my neck is broken in five places. My chest is flailed. I got three ribs through my left lung. My leg was underneath my rear tire, so I've got a degloved lower left leg. And they actually thought that I was going to die. But I didn't, and they thought I wasn't going to walk, but obviously that was an incorrect diagnosis. And so I come home, and I'm at home with my mom and dad, and there's all other five kids are gone. So I'm actually not like a prodigal son, because I've never realized like a bad kid, you know. I was actually the most fun kid of the whole bunch, you know. So I came home, but I had a lot of brain damage. I had a lot of brain damage, and I couldn't get words to come out. And so my mother and I played Scrabble. We played a lot of Scrabble, played like six games of Scrabble a day. So I got to be with my mom, and I got to hang out with my dad. And finally, when I could actually move around, I totally landscaped the entire backyard. Mm-hmm. And then I had friends who had come to me who knew about my incident. They called it an accident, but I said it's not an accident. I call it my auto incident. And I don't even believe in accidents, really. And there was a big book of Alcoholics Anonymous that was left at the hospital for me by Larry Tyree, who was at that time the general manager of New York Life in Santa Rosa. And Dr. Ghoulish, his real name, had a couple guys come in to the hospital from Alcoholics Anonymous and do a 12-step with me. And so there's this big book, which I can't read because my brain doesn't work to read, but I knew what it was. That was the first time I knew what it was. And these guys came in and thought, you know, do you have a drinking problem? It's like, yeah. Oh, I got screws in my head. I couldn't handle that telephone pole, you know. So, yeah. And so what happened was there was a couple of buddies from high school that were actually in AA. So it was so nice to know that I had a couple of friends and I wasn't alone. And we went to my first meeting, and this was in Sacramento at the traditional group in Sacramento on Watt Avenue. And I would ride my bicycle after this. They first drove me there, but then I would ride my bicycle. Every day they had a noon meeting there. And it was a good-sized meeting. Lots of smoke, lots of cigarettes, you know. And oh, gosh, it was such a neat meeting, you know. And there was a couple guys, like, oh, Jim would always say something that would make me laugh. And I'd be on my bicycle going, I wonder what Jimmy's going to say. Jimmy's going to say something that's going to be so funny. I can't wait to hear Jimmy. Oh, boy. Oh, boy. Can't wait to hear Jimmy say something funny. And he never failed. Even after he had a stroke, he'd go, that's his turn. And you just laugh because you don't know what he said, but it was funny. And never, you know, failed to you know, enlighten me with humor. And I loved the laughter in the room. First meeting I went to AA, I sat in the back right corner, and I listened to everybody, and I didn't understand what he meant by the process and trusting the process. But they seemed like a pretty, you know, congenial bunch of folks. I like these people. I could be president of this group. Seriously. Wow. It's about at that time I was thinking if I went to all the different communions that were actually happening on Sunday in Sacramento, I could probably get a buzz on by about, you know, 2 o'clock in the afternoon. Who thinks about going to communions for the wine? Like, that's crazy thoughts. But that's the way this brain works, you know. It would be legit because it's Jesus. Right? It's Jesus' blood. Really? So, wow. Anyway, I wound up getting a sponsor who was an old roommate of mine from college. And I remember one day he was sober. And this is thank God for Stephen, because I was bouncing at the refectory in Santa Rosa, and I was, after I did summer repertory theater, I would go to the refectory and bounce. And this is where the Raiders used to come for their summer camps, and a couple of cowboys from Petaluma. And I, one day, was standing there with my mascara. I had this, like, Maybelline mascara that wouldn't come off, you know. It didn't matter how much pond you put on, it's still, this one guy's coming up, and he's got a Pendleton shirt on, and it's summertime. He's going, are you wearing makeup? I'm like, are you going to be a problem for me? Are you wearing makeup? I go, look, are you going to be a problem for me, buddy? And I mean, I'm feeling like, you know, yeah, I'm wearing makeup, but I don't want to tell everybody. You know, I'm a bouncer. I'm supposed to be badass. So finally I told him, I'm wearing makeup because I just finished playing Judd in Oklahoma and I can't get the mascara off. And he goes, I knew you were wearing makeup. So he shows me his ID. Lester Hayes is right behind him. And Lester Hayes is a cornerback for the Raiders at the time. He's amazing. And he goes, I've always wanted to be an actor. I said, I've always wanted to play cornerback. Ain't going to happen, Lester. Anyway, that was just a story. So, had not a whole lot to do with alcoholism, except that after that, Steve came in. And Steve said, you know, that he had quit drinking and he quit smoking. And I had a cigarette and a gin tonic with an orange juice and float the gin. It's what I call the GTO, a Jeff Treat orange juice. Gin tonic, orange juice, float the gin. And I got my GTO and my cigarette, and he's telling me that he quit drinking and he quit smoking. And I said, yeah, I've cut back quite a bit myself. And I actually thought that I had, you know. Yeah, I know. So, knowing that Steve was sober, I called him up, and he became my sponsor. And he became my sponsor for about 20 years, and that really worked really well for me, and I think it worked pretty well for Steve. But then, you know, he's in St. Louis, and things take things to change, and I have a new sponsor who's been my sponsor for a while now, and that's Nick. And if you guys know Nick, Nick is an amazing man. He's a wonderful human being, and I'm just so grateful to have him as my sponsor. When I first asked him about being my sponsor, he says, what? You know, what do I have to offer you, Jeffrey? You know, I said, well, you're there if I need to call you. I'm going to continue to need to do the steps. You know, I need to have a local sponsor. And so he agreed, and we smoked cigars, and he's a great storyteller, and we play golf together, And it's just, if you don't have a sponsor, oh my God, I just pray that you get someone good like Nick, you know, because he's a great sponsor for this alcoholic. You know, and I hope that I'm going to be like one of his best sponsees. I think right now I'm his third best sponsee, but I'm third with a bullet. I'm fourth, I guess. I'm working harder at it. But, you know, I went to this AA dance. I was about 2 years sober, and I'm there with my sponsor Steve and his girlfriend. They got married, and he was the best man at my wedding. And anyway, we go to this New Year's Eve dance in San Francisco, and I tell you what, if you ever want to go have fun, I suggest New Year's Eve at an AA dance. Whew. Band sucked. Band really did suck. They were a terrible band. But we're in San Francisco. It's a full moon. It's a blue moon, which is like the second full moon in the same month. Pretty amazing. Doesn't happen all the time. And I see these two gals that are pretty good looking. I mean, they, you know, I have a disease, but when I saw them, I saw like Miss America and I saw Miss Universe. Now, and in this case, the disease of misperception wasn't taking place at that time. I saw them and they didn't see me, so I was kind of covert, just kind of on the side, just checking them out. And then the one, she started dancing with this one guy, and then they kind of like, oh, they, but then this other one, oh, gosh, she's cute. Dang, she's thin and dance is good, too. Oh, man. And all of a sudden, around midnight, I was thinking, I got to be around that one because when the 12 o'clock, I want to be close to that. You know, I'm such a cagey fox, you know. Just trying to manipulate and play it, but she's gone. Where did she go? And she's not there. So then, I don't know, all of a sudden, it's like 10 after 12. Oh, there she is. She's on the dance floor. And so I figure this is my opportunity because she's dancing with someone. That I can walk up to her while she's dancing and get in between the two of them and say, excuse me, what would you like to dance with me? And she said, I'd love to. And the guy puts his tail between his legs and he walks away. And I go, and then all of a sudden, it's like a slow song. And I went, oh. So, you know, it's like a whiter shade of pale or something. You know? And, you know, what's your name? Crystal. What's your name?
Jeffrey.
What do you do? Well, I'm an artist. But I work at Cedar Sinai. Mount Sinai at the hospital as a nurse. What do you do? And I go,
well, I'm a actor and a director. But I work for New York Life Financial.
Da 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 da. Would you like to go outside? I'd love to. So we go outside, then Steve and Joni like to go to have tea over at Steve and Joni's. I said, hey, would you like to go to Steve and Joni's and have some tea? And she goes, I'd love to. This is amazing, you know. So we go to Joni's. It's up on like Knob Hill in a nice little apartment up there. And we're sitting around this big table and we're all having tea. And because that's what alcoholics do when they're in recovery is that we have tea. And on New Year's Eve. So Joni says, so Crystal, how old are you? And she says, now get it, we're all 28, I mean, we're all 33, 34, right? And she says, 23. And I went, whoa. Check that out. I snagged myself a 23-year-old, you know, with 8 months of sobriety. Yeah, don't do that, guys. Do that. Totally do that. Is it working now? Oh my God. So that night was amazing. And we dated for a year. We lived in sin for a year. And then, God willing, we have a baby boy on its way, and its name is Daniel. And she goes, I don't even get to name him. I go, no. The first son to have a son gets to name him Daniel Allen Treat. He's named after my grandfather, my father's grandfather was Daniel on the tree. His grandfather was named Daniel on the tree. And his grandfather was named Daniel. He's actually Daniel on the tree, the second squared. He's Daniel on the tree, the fourth or something. And she goes, oh. Well, so we wind up getting married. We've been married now for 24 years. We've been together for 26 years. She has 26 years of sobriety. I have 28 years of sobriety. So I tell you what, I have a life where I'm surrounded by some of the best men in this world. And I was in the Navy with some of the good ones. And I know that these guys are even better than that. You know, I have some great friends. I have a great life. I'm literally overpaid, you know, for everything that happens in my life. I have a wonderful wife who, quite frankly, here's where I am today. I'm in, like, step... Well, Nick, what step am I on right now? I'm just kidding. I have step seven, because that's where my humility has to come in. I got to humbly try to get these character defects, which, again, goes back to the candy bars calling my name, the Slow Dough Co. You know, today I have to stay on the road. Hopefully there's a green light and then another green light when I'm coming off of Santa Rosa going down Foothill from the Friday night speaker meeting, because if there's a stoplight and I have to stop, I start thinking about Slow Dough Co. is only a block away. Oh, no, Slow Dough Co. is only, like, right over there. And if I get a green light, I take it up from God, you know, go. Go home. And so I have seven, which is to get these character defects to go away. Be gone, damn spot. You know, go away. But I just can't seem to get rid of me. And then step 11, which is, you know, you sought through prayer and meditation. Step 11 is huge. I mean, it's really huge. You know, let's make step 11 huge again. I'm just kidding. No. Sorry about that. The reality is that we were going to this church that had this stressing of having morning time where you had your prayer life. And it was really important then. And that was like at about, you know, 8 years ago, 10 years ago. And having that kind of a life where you actually spent time in the morning. And so that's when the first time I really started realizing that it says, ask yourself in your morning meditation what you can do. And I actually heard the word meditation. I heard morning meditation. And I thought, oh, wow, you're supposed to be meditating in the morning? Like, we like read that at like every meeting. Ask yourself in your morning meditation. So I started doing that. And oh my goodness, it's really cool. And then my wife and I have coffee. I like to make her coffee every morning, and I make it really good, I think. I mean, a cappuccino. I mean, I make her like a cappuccino, like a latte, you know. And so we have coffee together in the mornings. Sometimes I'm blessed with Van or Craig would come by because the surf isn't bad, but the coffee is good. So they'll come by and we'll have a cigar and coffee and a game of cribbage. Life is good. And I have two wonderful children that are getting married this summer. Not to each other, but to different... I ain't like we're from Utah or from Arkansas. Nothing if you're from Arkansas. I don't mean that personally, really. But our life is really, really, really good. It really is good. And I have... So there's step 7, there's step 11. And then I have a healthy dose of 10. Because I'm a dick. And I have to say I'm sorry, you know. And just like that thing about saying something about someone from Arkansas. I mean, really, if you're from Arkansas and I just made a bash on you and your sister, I'm sorry. Wow, this was more fun than even I thought it was going to be. So I got to tell you guys, I'm so grateful that I'm here. If you're new, again, Joe, good to see you. Patrick, Ashley, Brad, this is exactly where you're supposed to be, right? If you think you have a drinking problem and you're sitting in this room of Alcoholics Anonymous, I'm sorry to say, you do. Fucking A, man, what are you doing here if you don't? Right? Like, normal people will go, I'll go to AA. Like, what? Well, we're having spaghetti tonight. No, honey, I got to go to an AA meeting for some reason. I don't know. I think I might have a friend there I have to meet. I don't know. No, coffee. I heard they had good coffee. Which we do. So there's not a whole lot. Any questions? Just kidding. My time is up. I really had a good time. And let's give you all a big round of applause. Okay? Thank you very much. I appreciate that.